On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, I'm here with Corey Cook of the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. Corey, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, so again, Corey Cook. I'm the minor league strength conditioning coordinator. I've been here for, this will be my 10th year going on. I've known Chris for a little while from, I think we were your first stop, right?
First stop, baby. 2015, Appy League.
Bristol Pirates.
The Bristol Pirates, man. What a throwback.
Yeah.
So what was your journey to the Pirates beforehand? Were you in college or was it just straight from school to pro ball?
No, in college. So I started as a graduate assistant, University of Central Oklahoma, Division II out in Edmond, Oklahoma, right outside of Oklahoma City. After that, got my graduate degree there, thought I knew a lot of stuff, just like all of us do. Then couldn't find a job. By the time I graduated, ended up taking an internship at the Ohio State University. Make sure I say that so that people don't get mad. And I was at the Ohio State University for about 9 months before I went down to the Pirates with Carlo Alvarez, who was at St. X at the time, and then got hired as their strength conditioning coordinator in 2013, I believe.
And you worked up through the system, right, with the Pirates?
Yeah,
a little bit of minor leagues.
Yeah, a little bit of minor league, affiliate ball, then went down, did rehab work, and ran the Florida facility for probably 4.5 years, I think, something like that. Worked under Joe Hughes, who you know, and a lot of people probably listening to this know. Joe's been around. Was blessed to spend some time under him and kind of get it to where – he could groom it for, the strength conditioning coordinator and step me into some things for a couple of years where, probably at the time I was thinking I wish it'd go faster. But now that I look back on it, I'm glad that he did that because he didn't just dump me into a role that I wasn't ready for.
Yeah, Joe always had like the foresight to just know. Like I can very specifically remember days where he would just put things on our plate and it would be like, go do this. And then he'd be like, hey, he's going to forget this. And then he'd go out there and be like, did you forget something? And it's always like exactly what he expected to happen. I'm like, damn, Joe, you're good. I need to stick around. I knew I made it when Joe talked to me during his workouts at the end of the day. You know, he would play horrible fucking music and be miserable and go drag that sled around Pirate City. And then he came back and he started talking to me. And I was like, are you talking to me? Are you sure you want to do this right now? I was like, all right, I'm in his good graces. So
that's when you knew you were in a good spot, when Joe would talk to you.
Exactly. So you've been in pro ball a while, and I just want to hear what your best professional baseball story is. Either something that makes you laugh, something that makes you smile, a triumph, a defeat, just whatever it is that stands out the most in your mind from your journey so far.
Yeah, for sure. Well, as we all know, I've worked in college and switched over here. The environment's significantly different. And so my first year in pro ball, I was in the Sally League, and we were at Asheville in the little band box that is Asheville, North Carolina. And our pitching coach, I want to say it was probably like the third, fourth inning, goes out to the plate. Bad call, bad umpire, Sally League. We all know the story. Goes out, gets ejected. So this is like maybe my third game in professional baseball, I think, actually, probably third game. Gets ejected, causing a ruckus, comes in, grabs a cooler, throws it out, lands on third base, muddies the whole field. Our manager yells at me to grab him and take him to the locker room. Everybody knows the Asheville, you go out, and then you actually have to go through the crowd a little bit and some of the people that work there. Well, as we're going through, basically – the grounds crew tries to fight him, and I have to break up a fight on my way in, end up getting him into the locker room, all hell's broken loose out on the field, all this stuff. And at that point, I was a little bit like, man, what have I gotten myself into? This is professional baseball. This is great.
Yeah, welcome to it, right? first series, just eyes wide. Obviously, you bring up Bristol for me. I have tons of Bristol. I feel like everybody I know that's been in the Appy League is just like, Appy League, man, how did we survive? So welcome to minor league baseball, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that wasn't the only fight and ejection you saw over the years also.
Definitely not.
So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
I mean, Chris, you know me pretty well. I could probably take up the rest of your time with this one right here, but I'll be as short as possible so as not to do that. I would say more than anything, I think that I believe in the on-field assessment as your assessment more than all the stuff that gets done off-field. I think that as an industry, a lot of people spend way too much time with all the off-field assessments, and not to bang on like the FMS, but just an easy example that we all know, right? Things like that, when in reality, we know the guys move differently and what they do on the field calls for different movements. And I don't think there's enough time spent by guys in our profession actually breaking down video on the field. We all love to do with running, but we don't want to do with swinging, pitching deliveries. We try to leave that to the field staff, but movement is movement. And I guess that kind of to jump on a second part of this is I also think that there's too many places that stay away from us actually teaching technique. And I think that all of us are more than qualified to do that because, again, movement's movement. I think everybody should be able to break it down. I think that all of us would be pretty good biomechanists if we actually tried. And I think that the background should be that every strength coach should be able to break down video, you know, teach technique and use that on-field assessment to actually develop a program that's going to affect on the field.
So one of the very, very first lessons I got in pro ball, and I don't even know if you'll remember this or not, but you and I were talking one day and you said the game is where basically we see how they really move and we see who they really are. And you were like, you know, a lot of guys just kind of don't do anything during the game. They hang out, whatever, they bullshit. And there is value to communicating with players during the game. But you were like, there isn't a better place to assess a guy's movement than in the batter's box or on the pitcher's mound. And I always took that, like, literally one of the first things you told me was like, hey, if you want to be successful here, like, watch how they play and watch how they move and then make your adjustments from there. And so I always took that with me. And then anytime we hire new coaches here, it's like, watch the game and just watch what they do and like pay attention to how they move and how the hips move and how the arm moves and everything. So it's not, I mean, maybe it is crazy, maybe it's not, I don't know, but I can agree with you that like there is no better place to understand what they're doing than on the field. And I think with the force plates coming out that are in the mounds and the batter's boxes and all of that, it's like, you know, we're telling our hitting coaches here, like, get them on those plates so we can see how they actually use the ground and like what the force outputs look like instead of like us just pretending we know, you know what I mean? And so right. I think there's a lot of like, we do this movement assessment and then the guy gets hurt and we're like, well, he passed our movement screen. It's like, okay, well, that's not like the end all be all, right? And so maybe it is crazy. And then the part of like breaking down mechanics and, you know, us being qualified to do that, I think the game is moving that way. And like another, you know, simple assessment is like on base U, right? Like there's kind of that weird spot where like they have to appeal to coaches and they have to appeal to strength coaches. So sometimes for us, it's like really watered down. And sometimes the coaches, it's like next level to them. And then they come to us and they're like, dude, have you checked this guy's hip IR? And you're like, yeah, I've been on that for like months, man. Like we've been squaring that away. So, crazy, not crazy. I don't know. I think that's kind of where the game's going anyways. And kind of within like the years that you've seen that and because you're a coordinator, like how does that affect what you guys ultimately end up doing when guys first show up to spring training? Like I would imagine you're still doing some sort of assessment, maybe even to just, you know, appease certain people or whatever. But how do you go about like refining that or like making that your end goal of just assessing them on the field?
But I think one of the big things is obviously we all have the like medical assessments when guys come in, right? The not really check the box, but more make sure that we don't put guys into things that they shouldn't be doing, whether it be guys that are coming in super deconditioned to just handle activity in general and some things like that. So, yeah, we do that when they come in. But then on top of that, then it's guys actually doing video breakdowns with coaches. And that's something that I'm pretty adamant about, our guys actually doing video breakdowns with guys and being able to do the video breakdowns themselves and actually look at the intricacies of what's going on in the sequence, what's going on with the loading position, you know, the front leg retraction, when guys stabilize down the mound, are you getting a guy late back hip IR? If that happens, how does that affect things up the chain? Because we all know that one thing can affect something else and you got a domino effect that goes through. Then say, hey, off your best guess. And I mean, we all know that ends up being what it is, no matter how much data you have, your best estimation from experience, what you're seeing, and then also the guys around you, how are you going to make a program to tackle that? Right. And so that's a little bit more how we work. And it's, I would say I probably put a little bit more on guys' plates than some other places. And I can't speak to every other place because I haven't seen every other place, but some of the other ones I know, I put a lot more onto our guys' plates, and they're not dudes that are just teaching lifts and just doing some basic movement patterning and some things like that. Like, I want guys in the cage. I want them analyzing what drills are trying to do and giving feedback to the hitting coaches. Good thing about where our organization's at, and I got to give a lot of credit to a lot of guys that are around, is they're really open to using us as a resource for movement and not just weight room movement or injury prevention movement, or kind of how the stuff used to be, you know, when, not only when I got in, but even before that, obviously.
Yeah, I think there's probably a good parallel within that, right? Like, you talk about when guys come in, you do all the medical stuff just to make sure that they're like, can even handle the basic stuff, right? That's probably a good way to look at it, is like, if you can't pass our simple like movement screen or like our range of motion testing or our conditioning tests, like the more advanced stuff might really put you in a spot where you're going to just either not excel the way you want to, or even be at risk of injury. And then, you know, going to the way you interact with your strength coaches is probably the same, right? Like, most strength coaches, if they're getting into pro ball, they should have a good enough background of like understanding weight room movement, right? And like, for us this year, we had assistants at every level. And like, one of our assistants is like, dude, I love being in the weight room. I love coaching that up. And I'm like, that's really good. Like, that's the base level of strength and conditioning coach. Like, everybody should be able to handle coaching a squat, coaching a deadlift, like spotting a bench press, whatever it is. Like, but we need to take this a step further now in the game, because we spend so much time together, we're so like integrated in different departments. And like you said, like, those groups are starting to come to us because they understand we've got undergraduate degree, master's degree, all sorts of certifications, like, put those to use, right? Like, we really are like movement experts. Like, come to us and we can help you, right? And sometimes it's a little unorthodox, sometimes it's like a very straightforward fix, but I think being able to collaborate like that is a really good thing. And it's cool that you guys are doing that. And it's also cool that like your front office supports it. And that's kind of the direction you guys are going anyways.
Yeah, we're lucky. We're lucky with the front office that we have in. They give us a lot of support. And obviously with some of the situations, it's no surprise, being a smaller market cap team, you know, smaller market teams that you have to rely on the player development, and the bigger market teams, you know, there's some, a little bit more room for error. And I'm not trying to slight the larger market teams at all, because there's great coaches over there. Obviously, you guys have a great staff. And I'm not trying to slight anybody on that. It's just, there is some room for error sometimes, right? And with smaller market teams, like, I think every coordinator that says smaller market teams got to tell you, you end up getting a lot more stuff thrown on, and it just continues to push, and there's a lot more pressure with that stuff.
Yeah, that was when I first got to the Pirates. It was, you know, middle of March, spring training, and there was, you know, 200 guys in the weight room and trying to get to know all of them and all of the staff and everything. But the one thing that like constantly came up for me was just how much emphasis there was on player development and, you know, the quality of the weight room that they had there. That, I think that was the first year that the new weight room was open in Pirate City, and like that back storage closet just full of supplements and everything. And I was like, I mean, I had come from a small D3 with no budget, so I was used to like just grinding it out hardcore. And then they're like, whatever you want to get here, like, we'll get it. You know, we had like the sleds with the Pirates logo and the reverse hypers and all the new racks and, you know, that second level cardio stuff. And it was like, everybody was like invested in like, hey, we need to develop these guys to the best of our ability, because like you said, sometimes in a small market, that just that room for error is just so much smaller. And that's like a big piece, is just putting it. So I was like, oh, okay, pro, like professional baseball, sick. Like, this is my first stop. Like, they really give a shit about strength and conditioning and development. And then, again, not to knock other places, but sometimes you hear about some of the stories from other orgs and you're like, oh, okay. Like, it's not all the same everywhere that you go. So I was very fortunate to be there. And again, having Joe and Carlo, yourself and AB, Ricky White was still around. Like, it was just a good group to like get thrown in the fire with and like, all right, buddy, figure it out. Here's your whistle. Go do what you got to do. Right.
Oh yeah. And then you went to Bristol and then all the rooms were shattered.
And then I went to Bristol. Yeah.
So, concession stand.
Yeah. No kidding. So what do you believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? You're kind of in a role now where you get to hire people. Like, what are you looking for when you hire those people? And then when you do hire them, what is it that you think makes them successful and sticks around and moves them up?
I mean, so I think obviously there's prerequisites, right? It's like everybody works hard. Everybody wants to coach up weight room. Everybody wants to do that kind of stuff, right? For me, more than anything, it's critical thinking skills and being able to connect different pieces. Like I said, a lot of our guys, like, they have a lot of freedom in the programming. Like, we have guardrails for sure, but nobody should have the same program. And because of that, you should be able to critically think through the on-field movement, through the assessments, through what you're hearing from the coaches, through what you're hearing from the players, what you're seeing from your eyes, and then have a reason for everything you put in. So the critical thinking is number one. Then I think number two is I call it startup mode. I like dudes that are in startup mode that aren't afraid to sleep in the weight room if they need to sleep in the weight room, that go home and think about it, that do all these things. I mean, I try to set an example on that. If we have camp, I'm there. If we're different places, I'm there. I try to do it as well. And it's probably a fault of mine that my wife at some point is going to kill me because of. But I just look for that. It's like, guys can critically think, and dudes who just don't want to leave that are going to fit in our group. The guys that want to stay here, guys that, you know, may get offered another position like we've had, that end up wanting to stay in a position that looks like it's not necessarily, you know, it's not a move they should take because it may be a little bit higher move going somewhere else. But I look for those guys because I think that having a really good group, like, you know, is the most important thing, to where you want to sit in the office at the end of the day and you want to talk shop and you want to learn, you want to reach out to people and try to get people on the phone for the group. And that's kind of what I look for with our guys. And then I just try to look for different backgrounds too. Like, we have guys that came from a soccer background with Real Madrid, a guy that's a tennis background from Brazil, ex-pitcher, ex-Appy State football coach, a bunch of different guys, because everybody's going to have their own expertise and go from there. I think it's just all how you kind of blend that in so that everybody can contribute something a little bit different.
Yeah, two things with that one. First, so when I applied to the Pirates, Carlo told me the reason he wanted to speak to me was because in my cover letter, it said that I had been valedictorian of my high school. And that was something that was unique and like out of the box. And the other thing was, we had three people interview. We were all there at the same time, staying in the same room at Pirate City. And we did our interviews at like 3:34. Yep. And then it was dinner time. And then at dinner, I don't remember who told us, but they're like, hey, if you guys want, you can come lift tonight, you know, before you go to bed or whatever. And we went back to the room, and again, not knocking the other two guys, but they're like, man, I'm pretty tired. I don't know if I'm going to go. And I was like, did you guys see that weight room? Like, I am in there. I was like sprinting in, and right there, I was like, I know I have this job. I know it, because like all of those guys in there are meatheads, and they all like give a shit about being in the weight room, and they care. And like, they, like you said, they're in startup mode. Like, I got in there and I was like, boom, let's go. I start squatting. I started doing everything. And I was like, I just want to use this weight room. And the other guys were kind of lagging, and they're like, yeah, I guess we'll go work out and like, you know, do some mobility or foam roll or whatever. And I was like, man, I would fit in here with these guys. Like, look around, they're just getting after it. And you guys are on the foam roller. Like, no offense to foam rolling, but like, I was like,
we're going to offend everybody on this podcast this week, but I'm here for it. No, man, I mean, that's a thing, dude. It's like, we were talking about before we jumped on, like, we literally have had a camp day or the facility with like 30 plus people there in Florida, all but 3 days around Thanksgiving and then a week around Christmas. And it's one of those deals of like, I'm excited on January 2nd. I fly back on the 1st. I'm excited on January 2nd to jump in with a couple of our coaches and the players that want to be there. Like, it makes me excited to see those guys every day. It's like, you don't want to take a day off and you want to jump in. And yeah, am I at some point probably going to get burnt out? Sure, probably. But is it going to be worth doing that? Spend time with everybody? Definitely.
Yeah, I'll cross the burnout bridge when I get there. But it's well documented that I really struggle with the off season because there isn't like stuff going on, right? Like I can't wait to get back to spring training and just be with the guys. And like, you know, I've been calling just to check in with them. And it's just, for me, it's so refreshing just to hear them, like, and just talk with them and like, you know, whatever it is about training, about life. You know, we got guys that are having kids and they're excited and they're nervous. And like, just being able to connect with them, I'm like, we need to get to spring training. Like, I can't do the offseason. And my wife hates it. She's like, oh, yeah. I take personal offense. I'm like, no, it's not you. It's me. Like, trust me, it's me. Yeah. So, do you have any advice for others in the field, either young coaches looking to get into pro ball or older coaches that have been around that are just trying to stay on top of things?
I mean, I think more than anything, just reach out to people and call them or reach out and try to do site visits. I think a lot of people are intimidated, but I think our industry actually is probably one of the best to be able to do that. Like, there's not too many industries that you can reach out. I mean, I'll use this example, RIP guy, but like AB, when he was going up to Columbus, right? Reach out to Tom Berry up at Westside, go in. They go in to work out with him on like a dynamic bench day on a Saturday. Barry's like, yeah, come in. We're just started this time. Come in. You guys can jump right in. Louis ends up spending an hour and a half with him and our AT coordinator at the time and end up spending an hour and a half with these guys, just talking shop, asking questions, taking them through stuff. And you're talking about a guy that definitely wouldn't have to do that. And then think about everybody else that probably shouldn't have the ego either. I mean, I remember my first spring training, Carlo gave me that advice and I reached out. Ethan Reeves was at Wake Forest at the time, along with Seaver, who's still there. Stopped down, saw them, saw Chandler at Florida, saw a couple more guys on the way down. The one-day trip ended up taking me like 5 days because of that. And I had no money, so I was trying to figure out how to pay for a hotel at every spot or whether to sleep in the car. But I remember just reaching out to those guys like, man, they're never going to give me a call back. And those guys called me right back, got me in, spent time with me. And it's something that I think guys don't do enough. Just reach out to guys like, give me a call, give anybody else a call. You know, everybody's an open book or should be in this industry and there's no secrets. Like, everybody does a variation of a lot of the same stuff, right? So reach out, learn. I mean, just see what you can get.
Yeah, I think on the flip side of that too, even for older coaches, it's good to reach out to younger coaches sometimes, right? Sure. There are like coaches that have come up either through like the Salisbury tree where I went to grad school and like I just follow them on Instagram and shoot them a DM like, hey, former Salisbury coach, like if I can help you, like don't hesitate to reach out and everything. Like, I think it goes both ways, right? Like, it's an intimidating thing when you're young to reach out to somebody who's like, you know, that guy or that girl. And like you said, most of the time, everybody's really awesome. I've learned that through this podcast. Just everybody I reach out to is like, yeah, sure, whenever you want to do it, let's do it. Like, very open, very cool. Where like, for me, it's like, I got a little anxiety about reaching out to this person. But then the other side of that, now that I've been around a while and I've talked to a lot of people and connected, I'm like, you know, we should just go ahead and connect with younger coaches. And like, especially some of them coming up are probably smarter than we are with some of the new things that are coming out. Like, hey, I kind of want to learn from you. Like, can we hop on a call? Like, I want to talk to you also. So I think it definitely goes both ways. And it's just getting out of your comfort zone and realizing that like at the worst that they're going to say is no, like that's it. And like, okay, I'll just ask somebody else. You know what I mean? So I couldn't agree more.
That's a great point with the younger guys, man. It's like every newer, younger coach that I hire, I just realize how much dumber I am than they are. And I'm like, man, I'm just glad you're on our team because I have no clue about some of the stuff you're talking about. And I think that's one of the ones of like, yeah, letting your younger coaches teach a little bit too. Let guys with fresh eyes come in and let them criticize things that you're doing once they get the lay of the land, they understand it. Like, ask those guys what they think about stuff, what they see. Because I mean, shoot, I don't have a TikTok account, man, but I'm sure there's some good stuff on there until it gets banned by the US. Like, I'm sure it's going to be great, man.
Add that to the list of people offended, the TikTokers. No, I agree, Matt. I mean, for us, like I said, we had assistants at every affiliate. We have multiple interns every year. And like during spring training, I like to just sit with them at meals and like just talk and like, hey, is there anything I can help you with? Like, is there anything you're seeing? Like, it, and it's not always like, we don't always take what they say serious, right? There is an aspect of like, hey, we've been around a while. Like, this is kind of how we've figured out what works best for us. But like you said, having those fresh eyes, like one of our guys is like a freak power lifter. I'm like, hey, check out my lifting. Like, I need you to help me. Like, one of our guys has like NHL intern experience. Like, all right, talk to me about like catapult or like how they're tracking things in the NHL. Like, I think we can just learn from everybody, whether they're young or older. And it's just, like you said, putting your ego aside, like realizing that we're not as smart as we think we are, and just like, okay, accept it. And again, the worst that somebody's gonna say is no. Like, who gives a shit? It's okay.
No doubt, man. No doubt.
On the topic of like education and trying to be smart and everything, where are you going for continuing ed? Are there any books you'd recommend, seminars you've attended, podcasts you're listening? Just where are you going to try to be less dumb, so to speak?
I mean, I really like a lot of the stuff that's coming out of FRC, FRA. I like a lot of the stuff, especially with the newer courses they're coming out with. I enjoy listening to Spina talk because I feel like he's kind of a kindred spirit where you're crushing a lot of people and a lot of things and pretty open about stuff. I enjoy him. I mean, I think there's a lot that can be learned still from techs that have been around a while, that guys, especially the newer guys coming up, like there's not too many guys that, even Verko Shansky and Bondarchuk, who when we were coming up, you know, it's like those are like necessity reads that are there. So I think if I'm looking at a young guy, like pick up an old book. And I think Brian Mann said it one time, is like, pick up an old book and you'll find a new idea. You know, like all this stuff has been there and a lot of it is getting recycled, or a lot of it guys have tried to evolve too far and maybe are missing the point of why things actually happen. It's like, know the science behind things are getting done, man. And I think when you look at that, especially when we're talking about correlating things on the field, like Bondarchuk did it for a long time with the Olympic sports. Like, go back there, read that, and actually check out some of the texts that go to. I mean, podcast stuff like that. Like, I typically listen to a lot of business podcasts just because I'm now with coach education. It's probably like my main job, obviously, and system development. So, I mean, there's a lot of business podcasts that are really good. And I think there's a lot of different ideas that just like My First Million's one I really like. Two guys that used to own software companies sold it. And I think their way of thinking is just really refreshing, the way they look at things. And I think a lot of us in this industry, like you get in the log jam of every day is the same Groundhog Day situation. You're doing all that. But being able to step back and look at the system of how you're doing things and saying, hey, where are the inefficiencies, some stuff like that. Like, I think guys picking up just different books about business leadership and then look at some of the old texts, man. Like, that'd be my recommendation. And I think if guys want to shoot me an email after this or whatever, and they want a full list, like I can give them a bunch of lists that I kind of give our guys of like essential reading type stuff. But I'm not going to take 20 minutes to go through that. Unless you want me to.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, we're talking earlier about like video breakdowns for your coaches and like seeing movement on the field. If you had any continuing education resources that you have your staff read, just maybe for the sake of like refreshing movement on the baseball field or just like, you know, refining those skills, so to speak.
I mean, I think good resources, like we got Franz Bosch in house. Franz obviously he's got some books out that are really good about that, that looks at things a little bit differently, and like bringing up his name pisses off a lot of people too, which I love. I think the stuff that's been put out at like the Florida Baseball Ranch, I think it's like the Armory now, and some of that stuff, I think there's a lot of younger guys and that are working at those places that are putting out a lot of good information. And I think sometimes that we in this industry don't look at that because we're like, oh, they're talking about plyo balls and they're talking about weighted balls like driveline, right? They're talking about all this stuff. But when you actually look at the movement, we should be able to teach things like that. And a lot of those movements are things we should be correcting. And then how do we work to all the stuff we work on, force production, rate of force production, you know, all those kind of things. It doesn't matter if they aren't moving correctly and applying it correctly out on the field. But I mean, again, Bosch, like, he's a good one that I would recommend of just picking up a couple of his books. I think The Anatomy of Agility is a pretty good one to look through. I'd recommend that. And then just take a look at the Baseball Armory stuff up in Florida. I think they're doing a really nice job there. I think that probably for most guys, you're going to look at that. And I think it's going to be important to take different things from that, because I think it's about how you fit it into your system, not just trying to take and copy somebody's system. I think everybody's going to do it a little bit different, but I think those are two that are going to be, I guess, introduce guys some different thinking that I think is good.
Yeah. We have somebody on staff who's like a, you know, Bosch and like Stephon Jones, and you know, he worked in the NBA. And so he's got some different experience with some like unorthodox type of training, so to speak. And the big thing that like he and I talk about is just the principles of why you're using these things. So instead, like you said, instead of copying, pasting the Florida Baseball Ranch's water bag program, like understand why they're doing the things with the water bags, like what they're trying to make the movements look like, and then just make it unique to your own situation, like, and try to fit it in that way. And so that's the thing with like, it, from my experience very recently, it's like the coaches want to use those implements because, to be honest, they're looking at that stuff also, right? Like they're looking at the Florida Baseball Ranch, they're looking at Driveline, they're looking at Tread and all these other places. And they're like, oh, they're using water bags, they're using plyo balls, they're using, you know, the Vipers and the 3D straps. Like, why don't we do that? And it's like, well, we do, this is actually how we do it. And like, we have a system and like, this is kind of how we approach it. Oh, okay. That's awesome. Can you teach that to me? Boom. Show up in the weight room Monday morning. I'll run you through a session with this stuff. And then that's how it evolves. Like, and then, you know, you try some stuff and things like that. But I agree with you, like just copy and pasting just for the sake of like, oh, I saw this at Florida Baseball Ranch, box checked, like, let's do it. Yeah. Like, that's not actually making anybody better. Like having a rhyme, a reason, and understanding the principles, I think ultimately is how you combine like movement knowledge, strength and conditioning knowledge, and that baseball specific knowledge.
Oh yeah. And that's the thing is like, again, a lot of this stuff is stuff that's been around for a while. Like when you look at track and you look at javelin and some things like that, like the sport specificity and the usage of speed of movement and efficiency of movement with lighter implements is something that we actually work in. And when you go back into a lot of the Russian texts and some things like that, I mean, can you tell I even got my West Side shirt or sweatshirt on right now? Like I'm from 30 miles southeast of Columbus. I grew up between West Side and Elite. So most of my education, you know, came from those Russian texts and a lot of the things that Louis always has touted, and you know, Dave Tate had touted, Jim Wendler, a lot of the simplicity and a lot of those things. And while I think that things like the water bags and the perturbations and all that stuff, like it is great and it's a tool that you can use, I think a lot of guys get locked into, I'm using this and this is my tool that I'm using, and just because I'm using the tool, it's good. When you're like, dude, it's not the same. That's like if you said that just because you were using the barbell on a snatch and a squat, that you're using it for the same reason, you're affecting the same thing. We all know that's not true. Same thing goes for all of those tools. You can't just pick it up, shake it around and say that you're doing something because you're shaking a water bag. You know what I mean? That being said, like, I think it's a tool that's useful for some things. I mean, we use it for some things. I mean, Franz is super big on using that for some, but when you actually sit down, you talk to the guy, a lot of the things that I think that maybe people think about him that they crush him. And I was one of the main dudes that did that when he came in, and he knows that, he and I talk about it all the time, is it's not really like that. He is a lot more of, there's a lot more traditional strength training than you think. And I think that you got to know the science behind it and why it's being used. And I think some of those resources are teaching it pretty well of why the science is being used. And if you can't tell somebody why you're doing something, like we all know, like maybe you just shouldn't do it. And we're running into a lot with like all of us in the industry, right? We're running into it a lot with field staff right now. And it's becoming part of our job now to educate the field staff on the drills they're doing and what it's actually affecting. And that's where, again, I'll go back to, I think it's important for us to be out on the field and in the cages and those kind of things. We're trying to get our guys, or, you know, people that are in a more leadership position like yourself and myself, the make sure that you're getting out and helping to educate the field staff, because we do have the degrees, we know the movement, like it is our job, even though it's not our department.
I couldn't agree more with you. And I think that is like a very real situation in the game right now. Is just, like I said, the reality is like, the field staff and the strength staff and even the athletic training staff are all going to the same place, but they're just seeing it through a different lens, right? So like you and I can differentiate between like what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad with Florida Baseball Ranch, so to speak, where the coaching staff might just see it like, oh, that guy's using it and he throws harder, so everybody needs to use it. And then before you know it, 30 guys are doing the same drill. And it's like, well, no, like, this guy uses this part of his, you know, his legs for mechanics. This guy is more this with his arm. Like, this guy needs that. And it's like helping them to understand why to do things, I think, ultimately is kind of where that secrets, that like that secret sauce, that sweet spot, so to speak, is kind of there. And it's hard sometimes, right? Because it's like you turn your back for 2 seconds and then like all of a sudden 30 guys have, you know, a water bag in their hands. And you're like, whoa. What happened here? Like, where did you guys get that? Like, one of our buddies brought it. And it's like, okay, like, can I show you how to use this the right way, please? Like,
Exactly. And it goes back to like, us in this industry is as guilty of it as everybody else, right? Like a guy has 100 degrees of external rotation, his throwing shoulder, and we're like, oh man, he's flagged because of this, and we need to get it better, and we need to work on all this stuff. But we don't take into account that, you know, this guy throws from sidearm versus a low three quarter versus more over the top. And you don't take that into account of, well, what's enough for this guy? And that goes back to, you need to know what a guy's doing on the field and what that looks like, because you make a change that you think, and all of us are trying to do to help a guy, but you may hurt a guy on it. And I don't necessarily mean injury wise, but more performance and some things like that. Like, there's a reason guys are good, and we got to just really make sure that we're working to those strengths and trying to eliminate weaknesses that we can.
Yeah. Baseball is so skill oriented that even the littlest change to the body is like, you know, can really cause drastic, performance detriments, or like you said, potentially even injury for guys if, you know, they don't understand where their arm slot is anymore, or they can't, you know, feel the ground, or their swing is off because, you know, we unlocked something. Like, it's not always better to have more range of motion or to have, you know, whatever quality that we think they need, you know, they quote unquote, they need, like, they need to play well and they need to be on the field, and like everything else is supplemental.
No doubt.
So, Corey, I'd like to do a lightning round, and then I will get you out of here. Four questions, as long or as short as you want. First question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
I mean, obviously, I'll go cheesy and say I've learned something from everybody. Obviously, Joe Hughes, we've talked about a lot of times. But, I mean, my first coach, I worked under Jacob Black. He's still at Central Oklahoma. Threw me right in the fire, gave me like four teams, gave me a chance right away. He was 25, I was 23. It was just us two and 17 teams or something like that. And I mean, I think from an influence, one of the things like he told me that always stuck with me is we might be the most consistent things that kids have in their lives as strength coaches. And, you know, that's why you don't miss days. That's why you show up and you be the same guy. That's why you don't take vacation time, because you don't know where guys' lives are. And where I was at Division II out there is it was like we were between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. And if you failed or got arrested or did whatever, you came down and played football for us. And it was like last chance you. And dead serious, when we were there, we were probably the most consistent thing the kids had in their lives. And it always stuck with me when he said that. So I would say probably most influential, like that. It's one of the most influential guys.
If you only had one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Good question. I'll go creative here, because I'm from a farm in Ohio originally. It's like, just give me a baby calf and I'll just Milo it and just pick it up every day and walk it around.
See, I had you pegged as a barbell guy, but baby calf actually probably more fitting now that I think about it. So
you don't want to rock a mustache. without having that answer in the back pocket.
Yes, exactly. That's very true. What is your biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
This one's tough for me, man, because I don't take a lot of time to think about that stuff. So that's tough. I mean, obviously got married to love my life 4 years ago. We've been together for a long time. Personally, that's probably it. I'd say professionally, it's just whenever we get coaches that go other places that are successful, that I've just helped out along the way. I would say that's probably the thing I have the most pride in, is guys getting out and being influential in other places.
Last one for me, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Well, before I was going into strength conditioning, I was set up to do marine biology, and I have passion for that and was wanted to go into sea life rescue and rehabilitation. So I would say probably that. So a little bit of far cry from a lot of the dungeons we spend time in, for sure. So maybe that's also why I'm reaching out there.
Corey, this has been a long time in the making. And if anybody wants to reach out to either get more info from you or to complain about being upset about something that we said, where can they get you at?
I mean, I have an Instagram. It's Corey N. Cook, N as in Nicholas. You can hit me there. I don't really post a lot of stuff on it. I would say, if anything, can I just give my phone number right here? Area code 614-571-8166. Just shoot me a text and I'll answer to you. If you want to jump on a call, let me know. But just shoot me a text first so I can text you back, because I'm pretty bad at returning calls unless I schedule them right now. So,
amen. All strength coach life. Oh, yeah. I appreciate your time, man. It's always good to catch up with you and see you and talk shop. And we'll be talking soon, man. Have a good New Year's and good luck this year with your guys.
Awesome, man. Same to you. And thanks for having me.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude this episode with Corey. I hope you enjoyed this one. I think there was a lot of really good information in here in regards to on-field assessments and watching the game of baseball and helping players more so on the field than just in the weight room. Three things that I took from Corey in this one: understanding on-field movement may actually be the most valuable way to assess players. Critical thinking skills will help you connect the dots and find success. And educating players and on-field staff will help maximize carryover from specific drills to on-field performance. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.